you throw your friends up against the wall, like treat them like it's a romance novel like thing. And you're like, like, I feel like he could do that. And he's sorry, my mouth literally just drooled. That's so sad. Wow.
Welcome to Horror Movie Survival Guide, Disco Citizens, the podcast where gorehounds
and best friends Terry Gamble
and Julia Marchesi break down a different horror movie each week,
exploring a multitude of genres, subgenres,
and sub-subgenres,
classic and cult,
international
and underground flicks alike, determining which films are the goriest,
and offering up horror movie survival guide tips
to help you stay alive.
Hello.
Hello, Disco Citizens. Are you ready for another episode of Horror Movie Survival Guide? You must be, because here you are listening to it. I am Julia.
And I'm Terry. I'm ready. Tell us about this episode, Julia. What are we talking about today?
Today, we are talking about 2019's All That We Destroy. This title for this episode is She Seems Human. This was written by Sean Keller and Jim Agnew and directed by Chelsea Stardust. So we're very excited to talk about this movie today, not only by a director that we enjoy and writers that we enjoy, but also actors that we enjoy in this episode.
Yes.
Do you know how excited I was when I saw Frank Whaley's name on this? Because I fucking love Frank Whaley.
Honey mama, I understand, because we are the same age and we both, I think, had seminal moments with Frank Whaley in our youth, thinking that we were going to marry him some in our minds, like in our youth, right? And Samantha Mathis, I remember meeting her in 1999 with David Arquette. I have pictures on the internet. It's out there, kids. She's just beautiful, delightful to see them on there. But also this kid, Israel Broussard, who is also in the Happy Death Day series that I'm obsessed with. I think we both love, like, seeing these great actors. I was just, ugh. Chelsea, you got great actors for this movie. What the heck? This is awesome. So excited.
Yes. And, you know, we always love going into movies totally blind. And I think that this is, so this was actually part of the Into the Dark TV series that was done with Blumhouse TV. Jason Blum is the executive producer of this. And so this was a full length, but meant for
standalone movies. It's kind of like Black Mirror-ish, like where it's like standalone episodes of just like creepy fun things. Yes. And so this is this is one of the ones, and we love it so much, Chelsea.
So I had no idea what this was going to be out, and I was so excited to go along for the ride. So we open on a woman coming out of a glorious black sludge. This black sludge, who created it, thumbs up. Well done. Good job.
Yeah, it is ooey gooey disgustingness. It looks terrifying in just the most beautiful ways. She emerges out of the black goo like she's been resurrected, gets rinsed off, bathed, and put on, you know, made up. And then she wakes up, but she doesn't know who she is, where she is, or who she's with. But there's a cute boy there. You know, we love a cute boy killer. And I was like, well done right there at the very beginning. I was like, is he going to kill her now? And I was like, yep, I think so. He tells the, yes.
If you know anything about Horror Movie Survival Guide, you will know that our downfall is the cute boy killer. And so immediately you go, oh, man, because it's just, we know better is the thing.
And he's got those open, beautiful eyes. Like, there's something about this actor's face, Israel Broussard. It's just like, he's just like, looks like a little bit of an angel, but a sad angel. And I was like, oh, no. Sad angel, I want to hug you. I want to fix you. I want you to love me, and I want to love you, and I will make you better. And, you know, I think his mom has the same idea, honestly, too. So, oh, gosh.
Yes. So he pours her a glass of wine. He plays asks the walls to play their song, which I love this song. And she says, I'm trying, there's nothing. So he just immediately attacks her and smashes her head against the floor, and blood pours out of her skull, and credits. And I was like, boop, yes. Boop, boop.
Way to start a movie. Give us the death right at the top. Yes. And so he drags her beautiful body to the side of the house and goes inside and, you know, has like a glass of water. And then his mom's there and he says, oh, it's done. And she's like, OK. So I'm like, oh, so this is fully planned, fully premeditated. And she asked him if it felt any different. And he says, you know, no, I don't think so. And
yeah, he says it didn't feel anything like her. Mm-mm. So he had put her body inside of an outside kind of cooler looking area that we'll learn later is a tub for specific reasons. So Samantha Mathis is playing Dr. Victoria Harris from Harris Genetics, and she has a lab. And so this is one of those I love the kind of films that they're kind of lo-fi sci-fi, right? We're living in an alternate universe that they're just kind of touching on. So she has these conversations with Frank Whaley, who's playing her husband, ex-husband, and she has a black dot that she puts on her forehead, her temple. And then there it looks like they are walking through a field talking outside together.
Yeah, but her eyes also go like all weird too. And I'm just like, ooh, creepy. Like, is this future technology? It's just enough future where it feels like it could happen right now. Right. Like, it's like, I think like even once his face is like talking about doing the microchip in your brain, you know, kind of thing. It's just like that thing of technology. So absolutely delightful. And so she's, you know, having this conversation like, hey, like I tried this. I don't know if it's working. And, you know, she's talking about the experiment and how she's worried about she doesn't want to influence it. But he's, you know, encouraging her to like, you know, maybe try another tactic or actually, you know, be more of an observer in it. Maybe put up a camera, something. And so they talk about the experiment, and she tries to give her son, we find out his name is Spencer, like a composition book to write notes, what he feels. But he's like, she's like, I'm not getting much information from the notebook. He's like, you have to go further. So she's trying. She's also got that geneticist science gleam in her eye. And I'm like, oh, no.
Nobel Prize.
Yeah.
Nobel Prize. We know that scientist gleam that they want it. They can see it in the future. But Parker also says that she thinks that the son needs clinical help, and that maybe it wouldn't be such a bad idea if maybe he went away and got the help that he needed. And so he encourages her to start a live feed so that way they won't be a recorded thing, but she could actually watch. But as you know, when you know you're being observed, it's going to change the outcome. Anyway, right? He knows every he's time. Being observed, and he keeps looking at the camera during the sequence. So he's like, oh, you've already altered things
drastically. You know, another girl emerges from the goo, same thing like before. It's pretty much the same process, which looks exactly like the last girl. She wakes again and he asks, are you her or are you someone else? And then he asks the thing to play the song again. It's Every Time by the Babies. And she wants to go, and she tries to leave him. And of course, he doesn't let her go because he's going to murder her again.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting because he's not even really interested in a cat and mouse kind of playful thing. It's just this psychopathic tendency, and what he expects her to just wake up as this other person. So I think it's, you know, this kind of, as I said, like I'm really into lo-fi sci-fi, so this kind of stuff we're like, oh, she's just cloning her in this house in the desert, and it's just we believe that this happens, and I believe that this is happening. I think that's very cool that we're just slightly adjacent to this world. And so we have a flashback of when Spencer actually met Ashley in the middle of the desert. They live in the middle of nowhere in the desert, and so he has to walk really far to get anywhere. And Ashley was pushed out of a car by somebody in the middle of the desert and left behind. And they find each other, and he takes her back to his house. So she has no phone, and she really has no other choice than to go back with him. But she is a very, very gruff and very, you know,
she's cool. She's like a cool girl. Like, she's also seems like she's seen some shit, right?
Yeah. So she doesn't really have any kind of a filter to her. So she's just like, it's cold. Are you going to give me your jacket? And you're like, okay. I see it. And he's okay. Because he's been so sheltered that he has, you know, any kind of human contact. And to come someone in contact who's so much different than his mother, I think is probably really fascinating for him.
Yeah, he doesn't really know how to navigate the world outside of that house, really. Like, he doesn't know, like, even, like, common, like, pleasantries. I feel like he seems to be lacking. And I don't know whether that's just part of the psychosis or whether that's just part of the upbringing or a combination of the two. After he murders the Ashley 2 or 3 at this point, or I don't know however many they've had, he eats some PB&J.
This is their fourth attempt.
Okay. And so he's eating a PB&J just nonchalantly. I was like, oh, this is like feels like villain moment. Like, if you put a glass of milk next to him, you'd be full villain right there. Because like, I feel like that always signifies that in a movie. And he says it's not working. She's And you know, mom says it's going to take more time. I think I need to spend more time with the next clone, give her more empathy and compassion. We found out she's actually in the clone business. She's making parts, and that's like she's ready to like revolutionize the world with clone pieces for people. And she's an eccentric genius. She said people would call me an eccentric genius versus an overprotective mother if they really understood what I was trying to do. And she's got that gleam, though. Mama.
But, you know, the idea they're saying is that to try to make the girl feel more real to him, because she doesn't, it's okay if he kills clones, because she could just keep regenerating her, because that isn't really like someone real. So that's also the idea of, you know, what makes somebody real? Are these clones real people? She seems to wake up with, you know, motor functions and understanding of language. And, you know, so there's something there. How much is it, and what's making her human, and is she human? And so, you know, they're trying to make her more human.
Right. So he's an artist, we find out too. So he's out sketching the next day, and he's looks like he's observing some ants in an anthill, but he's actually drawing ants on Ashley's face and like doing this whole like kind of really beautiful portraiture of combination of like live stuff with this girl's face. And he's walking about as he is out in the middle of nowhere, and he sees a human, and he's like, oh, and he just stands there watching this girl kind of struggle, getting stuff out of the back of her car. And so she's a cute girl neighbor, this girl, Marissa. And he's like, hey, who the heck are you? And she's like, oh, yeah, he asks if the Cornells are still around. Seems to be the only people maybe that he probably has ever seen, it seems like, or hung out with. And she's like, no, I'm their daughter. I'm home from college, and I'm going to be staying here for the summer. And ting, it's a moment.
It is. So this is Marissa is played by Dora Madison, and Ashley, we hadn't mentioned, was Aurora Perno. And she's very perky, and she's also a little bit similar to Ashley, slightly bossy. It was like, oh, you can help me with my boxes now. Like, come stand. Why are you just standing there? So I think he's excited to, but, you know, excited in two ways, right? Excited in a way to meet a cute girl and someone new, but also excited because there's a part of him that probably immediately wants to kill her.
Which is why he kind of stands back, too. You can see that. He, like, holds himself. And you're like, I don't know if he's just being rude because he just doesn't understand. But I think part of it's like, he's like, I don't want to get too close because my mom told me also not to get too close to people. And also, like, I'm going to fuck this up. So Spencer helps Marissa carry her stuff into the house. And they chat a little bit about their life and, like, how she wants to be an artist and her creative pursuits. But she just got out of law school, so she's kind of wanting to change course. And so he takes that to heart and listens to her about her creative pursuits. And he goes home. And he's going to draw a portrait of her now. And it is gorgeous.
It is. Yes. The drawings in this movie are outstanding. And they a lot of times move when he's looking at them. So
the eyes bat.
Yeah. I like that. And then we said the ants are kind of moving and stuff. Mm-hmm. So Samantha Mathis, Victoria is feeding the analog, they call the clones, selected pictures from her life to give her life story. She has this realization. She's like, okay, well, Ashley already had a life story. So we just feed the clone her life story, and then she becomes this person. And so she's really trying to groom her. And when we have another flashback of them when they first met again, and she's in the bathroom doing coke in the bathroom and drinking some wine and being pretty forward, being pretty saucy.
Yeah, she is pretty saucy. We also intercut with all of this too. We get Marissa popping by and dropping off some cookies, a little plate of cookies for them. And mom's like, why are you here? Very, you can see where he gets his manners, because his mom is cold as ice. And she's like, why are you here? And she's like, oh yeah, your son helped me. He was awfully nice today. And she calls Frank Whaley, or Parker, her husband, and is like, hey, like this girl was here. And he was like, what do you mean? She's like, she could not shut up. How would you describe her? She's like, bubbly.
Yeah.
She's like, wow, too happy for this house. Like, which is why you could see Spencer would be like enchanted by her, because she's actually like delightful, and everything else around him is very cold and clinical and just sparse. So, and she's the opposite of that. She's kind of messy. She's got this big, beautiful curly hair. There's something about her that feels wild, and I think he's really obviously enchanted by it. So of course he's going to run into her The next day, and confides in her, you know, and she confides in him that, you know, about that she had an eating disorder and self-image issues and all kinds of stuff too. And yeah.
And there's also another, so Ashley and is now being introduced to the Spencer, the one that she has been groomed. She looks at those, she has been instructed to ask him about the things that he likes. So she ends up looking at some of his art. The line that the Victoria had been feeding her was that she was in an accident. Spencer found her
and saved her,
but she had some amnesia. She can't remember where she needs to go home, but she doesn't know where home is. But when she looks through Spencer's art book, she sees pictures of her. So there's and his pictures are beautiful, but the ones that he draws of her get more and more disturbing. And then there's one that he's drawn of how her face looks when he killed her and she's nose is bleeding. And so she gets kind of nervous and starts to get real like emotional and starts to cry a bit. And she's like, how long have you known me? And he says, I've known you since before you were you. And then he can't help himself and kills her again.
Plays their song and kills again. Plays her song and kills again. Yep. So it's got to be done. In the midst of this too, he's still giving love and light from beautiful Marissa. And she has, you know, gotten that beautiful piece of art that he gave her. And she actually took it to her school and had it put up at like for like potentially in put in for an art show. And he freaks the fuck out. He's like, I didn't give you this to like share and put it out in the world. This was just for you. But she's like, no, I'm proud of you and you could actually really do this. And so this is his first time thinking like maybe I could live out in the world and I have something to offer that's not just, you know, death and destruction constantly.
Yeah, and he actually has a conversation with his mom with like the first time you ever hear anything close to feelings that he ever talks about in the entire movie. And he says that he feels everything feels fake, that there's a membrane between him and the rest of the world, and that sometimes it can't it feels like he can't breathe. But he says now he hasn't felt this good since the first time, and actually wanted to tell her how grateful he is, and then hugs her. So she is flabbergasted because they have not had any physical contact for years.
Yeah. And he tells her he wants to be normal and he's tries, but she's, you know, mom is dubious because this is the first ever kind of sign of like that kind of life from him. She doesn't believe it. So she continues to try to train Ashley to be, you know, who she needs to be. But Marissa is getting a little suspicious of what the heck is going on at that house. So she stops by and she ends up taking a picture of Ashley and mom out in the garden snaps that shot and runs away. And she's going to do a little research. We love a research montage. She gets on her computer, looking it up, putting the connections together, finds out Ashley is a missing girl, has a record, all kinds of stuff. And she gets into it.
There's a missing poster for her, but there's also a wanted poster for her.
Yeah.
So we know she's up to she had been up to no good at all. And so we have another analog waking up with Victoria feeding her memories again and telling her about Spencer. They have this picture. They're talking about the dogs that they had and alluding that perhaps Spencer had also killed these dogs terribly. But they just had an accident. It wasn't, you know, we'll just gloss over that. But we were like, oh, okay. So that, you know, I think they're doing a really good job of this, of giving you the classic kind of psychopathic tendencies, right? You have animal cruelty, you have this feeling of everything being fake and like you're not part of the world.
Yep.
And trying to humanize it in a way where like, what if this is your son and this is how they feel, like how do you fix that? And how do you make it, can he be made better? And he understands what's happening to him. He's a smart kid, but it's also, he doesn't understand how the world works.
Yeah. And so, mom is called into a meeting by her company. This has been a push and pull because she has not been into the office for quite a long time while she's been making these new girls for her son, these clones. And so one of the heads of the company is like, you have to come in. The board is going to fire you, essentially. And she's like, well, my name's on the building. Like, I'm the one revolutionizing, you know, gives her a little haughty talk. And then she's like, dude, I've literally pushed this off for so long for you. You have to come in and show your face in order for them to still support your work. Like, and also, like, what the heck are you doing at your house? Like, we need to know what's going on. She's like, I can't. It's not ready. I can't share yet. So she goes into the office. But of course, as soon as she gets into the office, before she gets in front of the board, she's going to get a little text alert, because she, of course, has her son's text alert on her phone, like a good mom of a psychopath would. She sees that Marissa is texting and says that she knows who Ashley is and she's a missing girl. What's going on, basically? And so mom sees that and she turns her right around and runs back out of that building before she ever gets to the meeting, because she knows shit's about to go down.
Yeah, because Spencer had told Marissa about why he was homeschooled from sixth grade on. He was playing King of the Mountain with kids at school in the jungle gym and shoved a girl off of the top of it and killed her. So this was something that he knew, that this was something that, you know, they had hoped that that was a one-off thing, and now he has proven that it's not, and now it is going to be a perpetual thing. So there now, mom has to go and try to save because we have Ashley, who's also in the house, who's still in the form of trying to figure out who she is and what's happening.
And she had been locked up in her room because mom said, I have to go to a meeting. I'm sorry, this is for your own good, and locks her in there. So she's trying every which way to get out of that room, eventually finds a hammer. Thank goodness. I don't know why they would leave a hammer in there, but they did. And she knocks that the doorknob off and is able to get down, but not before Spencer goes crazy on poor Marissa.
Mm-hmm. So they do battle. She hits him with a bottle of wine, but then he ends up using a glass shard to stab her. But it's no problem, because you can just put her right back in that tank, lickety split. Not a problem.
Ugh. So mom gets home and she finds Marissa has been stabbed, and she's like, okay, well, we'll cover it up. And she gets like in her mom mode, like, okay, well, I know you've done it before. We'll fix it right up. Don't worry. I got this. But then he's like, Ashley's also missing, mom. And she's like, oh no, well, we'll find her. We'll fix that right up. Don't worry. And so he tells him to throw Marissa in the tank. He's dragging her out there.
But Marissa had also called 911 during the battle. Let's
exactly.
Just point that out.
Yeah, so he's like, the cops are probably on their way. She's called them a few times. And so Ashley finds the lab, and she sees herself reborn on the videos, and she sees all of these things, and she freaks the fuck out.
Yeah, but Victoria is said, you know, we do this together, and let's take the fall together. And, you know, he knows, he says, you know, like, it can just be me. Like, she has her company. She has all of these things that he doesn't want to destroy. But it's kind of, I think, too late for that. And I think they kind of both know that. So they have a confrontation, Victoria and Ashley, and Ashley ends up hitting her in the face with a hammer, and then kicks Spencer in the nut, hits him with a rock, and end up killing him exactly the way that he killed her so many times.
Had the memory of it. Because also, yeah. I think it's because she had the memory of it. Because, like, Victoria realized, like, as the clones were going on, that they actually were retaining memory of the death. She's like, I remember getting hit. I remember the choking, like, all of that, too. So it wasn't, even when she's making these clones, they still have some of the memory left in their bodies. And so the mom's like, yeah, I could collect my severance and sell the house and, and get away. So
just as Ashley is finishing killing Spencer, the cops show up right there to take her away. And she was wanted to be a criminal anyway. So everything kind of checks out there. But now, Parker and when Parker and Victoria have their final call, and it is their final call because she breaks the chip afterwards. Mm-hmm. He says that he was broken from the beginning, but mom may have a way to fix that, because we're gonna have that Spencer waking up in a little bit of black goo, and maybe Spencer 2 Electric Boogaloo will be better. And honestly, this is, I was like, I kind of want the movie to keep going from here, because, like, will it fix him? I would say, like, now you get the cool Spencer, because Spencer doesn't remember the psychopathic tendencies, or will he? Right, like, this
he
is
will, because I think based on how it's gone so far, she'd have to make a lot of them and set free a lot of those memories. I don't know if she could do it, but I like, you know, that a mother's love. She's like, any means necessary, I shall fix you. Ugh, brutal.
I think this movie's great. I think this movie is very smart. I think there's so much of it that I feel like I want more in so many different directions. And I feel like it's a really good sign in a movie where, like, I want to know more about what she does. I want to know more about this world that they live in. I want to know about.
I also want to know how, where dad really was and how she connected with him. Is he dead, or was that like a
he
I don't know.
He said that he wanted to be there if he would be there if he could, but you know that you can't. And you're like, but why? Where are you? What is this?
Yeah, like, is he like in some sort of like weird like space jail? I don't know. Do you know what I mean though? Like, for like space going jail. Too far. You know, in some other cloning thing, or maybe he did some other thing, because Harris is the name of the company. I don't know whether it was just, you know, if it was his or hers or whatever. Like, we just get Parker, but I don't know if that's the only name we get for him.
Yeah. So we don't really. And I guess also interesting to think about, you know, this having a Frankenstein, Dr. Frankenstein, who has someone that they can talk to rationally about it. You know, this is like, you don't normally have an assistant who, you know, you have like a Igor or a Renfield or somebody that's like not your equal that you're talking about this. And like, this is interesting to be able to have somebody
like above their pay grade.
Yeah. It is above their pay grade, right? This is somebody where like, you're your equal who's like, okay, you know, and they realize what you're doing is very, you know, unethical and immoral, and they know it's wrong, and they know you can get in big trouble for it, but they're not going to stop you from doing it because you know they're going to do it anyway. And they're just going to try to talk to you rationally about it. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really neat idea. And having him be there, like, I just want to see him all the time. I would watch him do anything. What a guy.
Yes. Ugh. Delightful. Absolutely delightful.
So how do you survive? Oh, man.
I don't think we do, because he's so cute. And I would wake up and be like, I love you. And he'd be like, you're dead. I don't like you. I mean, if you're Marissa, you're going to like want to hang out with him. Like, he drew that beautiful thing for you. Like, I mean... He listened to her.
I feel like Marissa needs, I feel like, mind your own business a bit. I feel like Marissa gets quite nosy, right? She's going over and like coming over a lot. And then she's like looking, taking pictures and doing
the
all
picture
that kind of
thing.
Stuff.
Yeah, that's invasive. I wouldn't have taken a picture. That feels invasive.
So
maybe mind your business is the
mind your business, I guess. I don't know. And also, you know, with Cute Boy Killers, you really got to suss them out. I mean, those eyes are beautiful, but those eyes are also kind of blank, right? In that kind of Patrick Bateman way of like, there's something wrong. It's, you know, because we talk about, we watch the Elijah Wood Maniac, right? And his eyes, that movie, I'm like, there's no way. I love you, Elijah Wood, but you look with me with those eyes, no fucking way. But then you have someone like Martin or you know, Eric from Fade to Black. And you're like, those eyes are so sweet, though. I see nothing in them that would say, these look like they would kill me a little bit. I would be a little bit nervous about these. But he's beautiful.
But also, like, you want him to, like, kind of, like, put you up against the wall a little bit and, like, do that thing where it's, like, you know. Where they like, I feel like it was like a TikTok trend where they're like, you throw your friends up against the wall, like treat them like it's a romance novel like thing. And you're like, like, I feel like he could do that. And he's sorry, my mouth literally just drooled. That's so sad. Wow. Okay. Cool. So like, I mean, cause he's like so adorable in Happy Death Day, and like, you just want to like put him like, you know what I mean? Though, like, I don't know. There's something about this actor, and I just, yeah, it's sad. I'm sorry. I would be Marissa. I would be dead, and I'd be jogging by his house like every other day. Be like, it's kind of out of the way, but I'm trying to do my fitness. You made that picture of me.
I see you.
From memory. Thank you. Oh God. Yeah. Right. So that's how we do.
Give us some gore.
I would love to gore you, Julia. Let's do it. One, not enough blood to fill a Dixie cup. Two, a puddle of blood. Three, enough blood to gross out their average viewer. Four, a bathtub of blood. Five, run for the barf bag. We give this film a 3 because it's mostly puddles of blood in the back of our dear sweet Ashley multiple times. And then we get that stabbing in the chest of our sweet Marissa towards the end. So definitely it's multiple puddles of blood. So, yeah.
It's hard when you get goo because it feels gory and yet is not gory at the same time. So it feels gorier than it actually is. But that black stuff's delicious.
Yeah.
Movie ratings. Chainsaws. 1, if you're desperate. 2, barely qualifies as a horror film. 3, seen worse, seen better. 4, not too shabby. 5, fantastic oracle. This gets a 5 for me. Fantastic oracle. I mean, from the actors alone, everybody gives an outstanding performance. I think the script is tight and clever and smart. And it gives me the lo-fi sci-fi stuff that I love. You get this kind of world that you're just adjacent to, which is really fun. And also it feels almost time loopy as well, because you're getting this death happening over and over and over, which I also love a time loop.
I know, I say, I know Julia's obsessed with the time loop. And I thought about you and I was like, this is Julia's movie. I was like, you and Chelsea, loop. I feel like you guys, like, it's so funny. Like, again, alternate universe, each other. I feel like a little bit too, like, it's brilliant. So like, this is great. I also give it a 5. Same thing, because I also love like a Groundhog Day. Again, a happy death day to you. We get, which is another time loop movie that this kid was in. So, and both of those. So it's like, yeah, like that is, I think, our jam. Also, you put Samantha Mathis and Frank Whaley in a movie and we were like.
Yes, that.
I mean.
Do you know how many times I watched Swing Kids? Do you know how many times? Yes. I can't even tell you. So yes. Many times.
Yes, because I too. Julia, we had alternate universe before we met. That was us before we met. The movies that unite us are many, and some of them are pretty random, like The Worst Witch. I'm like, who else? And it's like you and me, like, are both obsessed with that movie.
Michael Verratti, he's obsessed with that movie too.
Yes.
He's got his, has anybody seen my tambourine shirt, which I adore.
Delightful.
So, if you would like to talk to us, we are on the internet on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. We would love to talk to you about anything that we've talked about today. Frank Whaley, Swing Kids,
Samantha Mathis, how beautiful she is. Happy death day to you. Frankenstein all day. Oh my God, please. Yes.
Yes. I have 2 other podcasts. I'm on a podcast about Stephen King called The Losers Club. I'm also on another one about Alejandro Jodorowsky called Jodorowsky. And they are both very fun, intricate deep dives into very nerdy things. And this is what I do. And I love it. And thank you for wanting
They're
to hear
so
me.
They're so good, Julia.
Talk.
I'm obsessed with those shows. I just want to let you know. I'm also a listener and a subscriber. Just because it's delightful. And also, I feel like I learn so much every time, because you really are a font of knowledge of movie history and culture. And Julia and I both like to show our faces sometimes. We actually are getting to do that more often now with Horror X that we do with the George A. Romero Foundation, a show all about women and femmes in horror that you can stream on the GARF network. At the George A. Romero Foundation YouTube, or go to their website for the George A. Romero Foundation, support them. They're doing wonderful work, helping preserve his legacy and work, and supporting new filmmakers on the rise, like Julia Marchesi with a beautiful movie, Like I Know What You Need. So, that's you. Please check us out there. You can also join our Patreon if you want to support us. Get some merch, support the logo. Get out there at our street team. We love it. We love to see it.
Yeah, for sure. And also support awesome filmmakers, and especially women in horror, like Chelsea Stardust. So thank you so much for listening. We have you. Hope you have a groove-tastic week.
Ooh, groovy baby.
Thank you for listening. Horror Movie Survival Guide is independently produced by Terry Gamble, Julia Marchesi, and Sierra Ryan. Hey, that's me. If you would like to support the show, find us on patreon.com/horrormoviesurvivalguide.